Thank you very much, and we appreciate just the overview to bring us back to where we were in the conversation. So I think at this point we can open it up to questions, and I think what we'll do is go around the table, and if you can ask one question at a time, and just we'll go around and make sure everybody gets a chance. So Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. So thank you for returning, first of all. I have a question about the number of people on council and what you may have experienced before. So do you see any trend in when there's less people on council, it becomes more of a, I wouldn't say full-time role, but more of a substantial role where each councillor is carrying a heavier amount? Does that happen, or is that the intent of having less?
I think it depends, and thank you through the mayor. I think it depends on the place, right? And I think that's part of the theme of this conversation. It really depends on the place and the level of engagement and, you know, how many issues there are that get brought up to the council. So I think it largely depends. But ultimately, sure. I mean, ultimately, if council gets smaller and you have then more residents, more constituents to under your ward or under your purview, then sure, logic would say that your workload's going to increase a little bit. But that said, I mean, there's no small municipalities where councillors hold a full-time position. There's only a few select municipalities like Hamilton, Toronto, Ottawa, Vaughan. I think those are, you know, off the top of my head, the ones that are actually full-time positions. So the workload may increase, but it doesn't, you know, I know zero, you know, under 100,000 place municipalities where council's a full-time job.
Okay, going around the table, Councillor Less.
Well, the way I see it is that we're really not necessarily rearranging the councillors. We're rearranging the population to give this proportional or mathematical correctness to the number of residents per councillor. What you lose is the distinct community, because there's the only way it works mathematically is to combine urban and rural together in some combination. And so we have a situation brewing where, let's take garbage for instance, the rural people currently have voted not to have garbage pickup. And that could change dramatically because we have urban people with garbage pickup that will now be influencing a potential vote in the rural area. So I find it, it just doesn't make sense to me. And you lose the distinctness and the uniqueness of the communities, especially the rural community, in my opinion.
Thank you, Councillor Lewis. Councillor Clare.
Thank you. I'm going to pick up where we left off. I think my main concern overall is this issue of multi-member wards versus single-member wards. So I have actually really appreciated this month to go do a little bit more reading and research on that based on some of the information that you shared last time. So I just wanted to pick up on I did recently find some more research that is showing, including like a 2023 Evans et al. Study on municipal political behavior that aggregates some other studies and shows that increasingly, even at the municipal level, people are motivated to engage on the basis based on shared values and priorities and more identity-based politics. And I think that comes back to me to this question about how we define communities of interest and whether they are in fact geographically concentrated or spread across neighborhoods, which we spoke about a little bit last month. I also keep coming back to evidence that shows that, you know, when you have single member wards, it can be more challenging for women and other equity seeking candidates to get elected in those contexts. And I think for me, when I was really struck by that at the AMO Healthy Democracy Conference, where I heard from representatives from groups like Elect Her Now and Black Vote Canada, who prefer multi-member systems for that very reason. And then the last piece I'm conscious of, I think that when I'm thinking about that identity-based politics being what motivates voting as opposed to neighborhood issues strikes me as that's likely connected to shifts in the role of municipal governments. So we're really not, you know, in 2025, in just in the business of neighborhood issues, potholes, playgrounds, those kinds of things. But especially at the council table, we're tackling really big cross-cutting issues like homelessness and climate change and economic resiliency that certainly cut right across neighborhoods and impact the municipality as a whole. So I wondered if you could speak a little bit to, I know you've been doing this work a really long time, could you speak to how your modeling or your approach to ward boundary reviews has shifted in recent years in recognition of those shifts in terms of the role of local governments and why people engage in municipal politics?
Yeah, big question. I mean, the ward boundary, like, so I think the most important part of all that, I recognize all those things. And I think maybe the way it shifted is starting to look at some of the softer attributes a little bit more, right? And so the interviews with counselors, the engagement, the feedback, the survey responses that we get helps influence ultimately what our recommendations or things that we want to look at. So I think that's the shift where it's moved a little bit more towards, you know, that recognition of, you know, community of interest and community of interest, right? And I think you make a good point. It's not always geographic, right? And it's not always just a rural urban thing or an agricultural thing. Community of interest could be, you know, a big development that's going on, or could be a lot of different things, right? But ultimately the challenges we have are I think two things. One is we have to stick back to the guiding principles, and that's what ultimately always helps us define how we, you know, use this criteria. Is we can look at those things and sprinkle those in, but ultimately for my, not your job, but my job is to go back and make sure that the recommendations and the options we give you can fall back on that, because I'm trying to give you an objective, independent, defensible option. You as counselors have to look at things a little bit differently, right? And encompass a whole bunch of different things that we don't necessarily look at. So I think that's how it's changed, but, you know, maybe a little bit of how it's not changed as well. The other parts, I mean, you know, gender, race, socioeconomics, all of those things get very difficult to define outside of geography, right? And that's a major limitation, right? Is that any electoral boundary that you see in the world, right? No matter how we elect governments, and you make some good points, right? Like a local government has changed in terms of the complexities and the interests and the things they deal with. But a provincial government and a federal government could be argued as even more complex and even more far-reaching and more high-level, yet it's still elected by small area geographies all around the world, really, right? So I think those are great points, right? All things that we want to try to bring into this review as much as we can to get to know the place a little bit better. But I think the, you know, limitations or the realities, maybe is a better word to use, are the guiding principles and, you know, geography, right? And I think maybe some of what you talk about is probably, you know, I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but I think where we led to last time is an at-large system, the way to start to, you know, address those, because geography goes out the window. And then if you do have a particularly strong common interest, regardless of where you are in a municipality, that could start to, you know, influence council and the type of counselors that are representing that interest. So, you know, that's always a way to look at it. We can talk about the pros and cons of at large if you want. I just don't want to lead anybody there, but I hope that answers, you know, some of what you asked.
Thank you. And you must have read my mind, so I'm going to jump right in there. Before I go, Daryl, do you have? Yeah, go ahead.
Just to kind of continue on Councillor Clare's line of thought, my thoughts about multi-councillor versus a single councillor per ward are more to the constituent side of things. And I'm wondering if there's any data that showed a single representative ward would increase or decrease the amount of participation from the constituent. Like, was that further siloing them down to they think they only have one option, one way to go? Where now we have a system where they have multiple options for ward. Like maybe the relationship isn't so well with that counselor and they feel maybe they're trapped at that point.
Yeah, thank you, and through you, Mayor. I don't have stats exactly on that. I think the council presented some from, I think it was AMO or some other reports last time about better participation or better voter turnout in multiple member wards. But what I can tell you is just based on perspectives and things I hear when I go to different municipalities. And again, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but it really varies, right? I mean, we just did a couple of reviews in Niagara, and we recommended two member wards, right? And part of the recommendation here is two member as well. It's and maybe just to be clear about multi-member wards, it's not that we, you know, don't like multi-member wards or don't make that recommendation. Our issue that we raise isn't multi-member wards, it's asymmetrical wards. It's when one ward has more councillors than another ward, right? That's where we think equity and you know, is there equity and fairness in voting when you when one person gets more vote than another person. Then we go down the proportional road, you know, rep road, but that's a whole different conversation. But so just to be clear, it's not so much multi-member wards that we think could be problematic. But the one thing that we do hear, so anecdotally, we hear both. It's great because if you do have issues with one counselor, you don't see eye to eye, you have another person to go to or another view. Busyness, workload, all of those things can be helpful when there's another, even perspective, to talk to your other counselor to get, you know, a different perspective or a different idea. There's a lot of, I think, pros to it, right? Some of the cons that we hear are, I don't know which counselor to go to, or from a counselor perspective, I'm really well known in town, and I get 95% of the calls because I own the hardware. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so it really varies, right? And that's why exactly we do those council interviews, is because we can give you perspectives of different places, but we want to hear from you. How does it work for you guys? So I hope that answers.
Thank you, Councillor Darrell and Councillor Todd.
I have a follow-up on that. I guess, is there any data that has possibly the flip side around that about accountability? So if you've got a multi-member, is it one of those things where I think they're taking care of that? And the other question I think goes with it is, do you have any information that the residents would expect both members to vote the same way because you are representing us? So if they don't vote the same way, what sort of pressures befall them in that area?
Yeah. So no data that I'm aware of, but I think these are great things that we can put on the next survey and ask your residents some of these exact questions, see what their perspectives are. But the things you raise are all things that we have heard from constituents and councillors, right? The one pro that we hear about single member wards is accountability, right? That just the things you mentioned, like if I'm going to talk to Councillor Attridge, I know that the buck stops there, right? That I didn't say, well, no, I thought someone else was taking care of it, or so. Like that's one of the main things, right? But then, like we said, there's a bunch of pros as well. But I think accountability, identity, those are, you know, the main kind of positive attributes we hear about a single member.
Thank you, Councillor Todd. Yeah, we're gonna go keep going around. I'm gonna go back to the deputy mayor.
Thank you. So just before I ask you your question, to Councillor Todd, being in a ward now where I did have, I've worked with three different people, where there's two, yes, there is that expectation that we will vote the same. I've experienced that.
Oh, yeah.
So my, in this community anyway. So my question to you, sort of changing direction here, is regarding the deputy mayor. So I won't share my opinions too much, but I was once of the opinion that it should be, that position should be elected at large. But now, speaking with numerous people through this process, I've had a lot of people ask, why do we have a deputy mayor at all? And it's that thought, at least in recent history, it's always been, should it be elected at large or appointed? The option of not having one was never really brought forward until now.
Yeah.
And I think some people are starting to think about that. So do you have anything more you can share on how functional municipalities can be without that role?
Only anecdotal, but I can give you some stats if that's helpful, just to give you some, I think, perspectives. So right now in Ontario, I think this is not every single municipality, but it was the vast majority, like it was like in the 400s or something of municipalities surveyed. but 33% don't have a deputy mayor at all. Right? So it's about 70-30, a little bit higher than that, 67-33. Then they broke it down a little bit further, and then they looked at of those same positions, what's elected and what's appointed. So obviously the 31% doesn't change that don't have one. Then of the ones that do, about 30% are elected, 37% are appointed. Then they started to break it down a little bit more and started to look by municipal tier. So that's everything. That's, you know, that it could include like a deputy warden at a county. It include deputy mayors for single tier. Then for lower tier municipalities that have an upper tier as well, it changes a little bit. Then about 24%, so it goes down a little bit, 24% don't have a deputy mayor. But then if you look at it by population, between 10,000 and 100,000, that's where Port Hope falls in, about it goes up 31% don't have a deputy mayor. So it's I mean, I hope you get a sense, like it's around 30%. If you're a little bit smaller, you're less likely to have a deputy mayor. If you're a little bit bigger, you're more likely. If you're single tier, you're a little bit more likely. So I hope that, like, I mean, it doesn't necessarily answer your question, but like, you know, in my experience, like I've worked, like I've done studies with municipalities that run completely well without a deputy mayor. I've, you know, worked with ones that have to have a deputy mayor because they're the second seat on county council, like in Simcoe. And I've worked with ones that feel they have, you know, don't have an official need for one, but just, you know, to alleviate some of the mayoral responsibilities. Some, I think, you know, similar to, I think we discussed this last time, some may look at it to have an at-large voice mixed in, so almost like a hybrid system where you have your ward interest, but you have an additional at-large person to consider, you know, the municipality at whole. So it's kind of all over the place, as we can see.
I'm going to go back in. I think it was Councillor Todd, Councillor Clair, and then Councillor Ness. Did you want to go again, Councillor Todd? Okay, great. Then Councillor Clair, and then Councillor Ness.
Yeah, I think that the question around you know, the accountability, I think that's very well received, and I do see that as a potential advantage. But at the flip side, of course, there's the, is it COOPS, that study on ward systems versus at large, that did find that it does lead to more parochialism and that notion of you must vote the way ward says you should vote, as opposed to fulfilling your obligations per the law of representing the community as a whole. So that's a bit of a challenge, but I'm going to go in a slightly different direction, because one of the other trends we're seeing in municipal politics is a real sort of rise of incivility. We recently passed a motion brought forward by colleagues here to endorse the Elect Respect campaign that speaks to that. And it occurred to me that when we were running in, you know, a multi-member system, you know, we're sitting in the debate and there's, you know, 17 of us on the stage, there's no way to do you can't run on personal attacks. You can't run based on I'm better than that guy. You have to really position yourself, here's what I have to. And it occurs to me that in smaller wards where you may only have a handful of candidates, it could be a lot easier to fall into that kind of adversarial style of politics. And I wonder if that's something that contributes to what we're seeing in municipal government. I wondered if you knew of any studies, because I know it's still pretty new, that have looked at that in terms of how we elect officials and the tenure of those elections.
No, nothing that I'm aware of, but we can do some research and see if anything exists. You know, that's the thing, is a lot of this, like there's, like you said, AMO, there's a couple of organizations that are starting to try to put some quantifiable data to this. Not a lot is out there. It sounds like you've done your research as well. Like there's not a ton out there. A lot of it is pretty anecdotal still, but I think it's going to start, right? Just like even the deputy mayor thing. Like I think there's more classes, more teachers, more research that's starting to go into municipal politics, because it is dynamic and it is changing. It's very different from where it came from, right? So I think there's more of that happening. You know, there's flip side to everything, right? Like, and I agree. I think, you know, that ward system definitely has some of those issues that could come up. You know, I think we talked a little bit about this last time, and we'll, you know, maybe delve into the at large a little bit, right? The other thing that comes up at large is, you know, sometimes, you know, I think I mentioned Stratford, I think it was 10 counselors, I think 34 or something, I have it in my notes somewhere, 34 people ran. Like, a lot of times in an at-large system, what we hear is, and even the results bear it out, is that people could start to win because their name is starts with an A, right? And because you just can't identify, and you just don't know that many people to you know, vote properly. So it, you know, it's like, I don't want to be in your position, right? Like, it's a lot easy for me to give you perspectives, tell you what's going on in other places, you know, where at large can work and where maybe I, you know, in my opinion or my perspective, I think it can't. But ultimately, it's something that you all have to decide on how it works in Port Hope. I mean, maybe really quickly on the at large, because I think it might come up. I know last time we talked about Coburg, so I just did a little bit of a, you know, look into, like, you know, why are Port Hope and Coburg the same and why they aren't. If you recall last time, I think I was asked, you know, where do you think an at-large system could work? And I said, for me, and based on what I saw, places are pretty compact, pretty homogenous. And I don't mean everyone's, you know, white or everyone's Catholic. I mean homogenous in terms of, like, you know, lifestyle and, like, where you work and go to school and all of those different things. That there's not huge, like Port Hope, huge rural areas and big divisions between how those areas are serviced and all these kind of things. I said, you know, that's a place where I think, you know, at large is possible. And I looked at Coburg and I went, oh yeah, that's the place that I was talking about. Like, because when I look at it, and I have some stats here that I can find, I hope. But some of the stuff that I looked at, like, so Coburg, for example, 22 square kilometers total. That's the geographic distance. You're about 280 in Port Hope. Like I said, compact urban area, not a huge rural area, pretty homogenous. Port Hope, very different. Even within the urban area, different neighborhoods, waterfronts, all those things, rural areas, quite dispersed with different communities. Density-wise, Coburg, 916 people per square kilometer, Port Hope, about 62, right? So those are the types of, and again, that doesn't mean because I read those numbers out that at large works there and it doesn't work there, not at all. But just an example of some of the characteristics that we look at and say, oh yeah, I can see why it's a possibility there and maybe why I wouldn't necessarily recommend it here. Because the danger always to me, my biggest worry in that large system is, you know, the outlandish example that I give is that your whole council can be from one street in downtown Port Hope, right? Whole council could come from outside this building. Is that equitable? Is that fair? Maybe, right? If it's population metrics and representation by population, and that's where the population is, like, right? But would, if I lived in the rural part, would I think that I'm getting, you know, the representation that I want? That's always the danger. It doesn't always work that way, right? I mean, the rural area is more engaged usually, not just in Port Hope, but in most places in Ontario. Reputation, tradition, all of those things come into play that could outweigh population metrics in an at-large system. My opinion is at some point down the road, those things start to get forgotten and population starts to roll. So,
thank you. I'm going to go to Councillor Lawson.
Yeah, I'm going to switch the conversation back to the deputy mayor. And if I was mayor or running for mayor or appointed mayor, I would want some level of influence who my deputy would be. I want somebody supportive, synergistic, similar sets of values. I don't want a person that is going to be the second mayor, whatever that implies. And then, you know, you get what you get. And I think of the Premier of Ontario, when he's elected, he got what he got in his party. But he chooses his cabinet. And if he chooses wisely, then they sort of go along with his direction. And if you have a separate election for a deputy mayor, you know, what in that person's mind as deputy mayor was run a separate campaign in both areas, why are they distinct from being the mayor?
Okay, I'm going to jump in. Is that okay? Or did you have another one? Okay. Well, because I was going to jump, I figured because I've gone a couple times, I was going to jump in with a few questions, if that's okay. Or do you want to go because it's on? You sure? Okay. See how polite we are here. Kind of weird. So actually, I'm going to ask you, you know, you've done so many of these studies and so many of these recommendations. I'm curious to know, how many communities have you actually gone back to and evaluated whether or not whatever changes were implemented were working better than the former model?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And Dr. Williams, who's the sub-consultant on this study, we were talking about this morning. How do we know, right? And that's exactly what we asked each other. We're like, how do you measure the success of whether it's working afterwards? Is it voter turnout? Is it engagement? Is it counselor workload? So the simple answer is not really, in terms of what you asked. Did we come back and do surveys and those kind of things? But it's a great point that you raise, and that's why we talked about it this morning. Like, how can we measure that after the fact? But there are a couple of examples I can tell you where we've gone back and had to do a review again, right? So one that happened was, and it's very relevant to this conversation, was in Oro Medonte. The council picked an option. They had a deputy mayor elected at large, and the deputy mayor in Simcoe County actually is the second representative on county council. They, in 2021, made a decision to go away from the deputy mayor elected at large to a mayor, deputy mayor selected by from council, but they moved up in size by one, added an additional ward and councillor to keep council size at the same time. We went back a few years later, we were talking to the clerk, and the feedback that we received there was that the deputy mayor selected from council wasn't working because of the onerous tasks that were involved for that deputy mayor to sit on county council and then also have to be a ward councillor. So went back and they picked an option that reverted it back to the way it was and looked at a different ward boundary configuration.
But,
so
okay, but you don't do four. Can you hear me? Yeah. But you don't, as a matter of course, do formal evaluations. Okay.
Yeah, not really. Only because, yeah, like that's something we talked about, but only because it's, like I said, difficult to determine what has been successful.
Okay. So I'm going to just jump in with a few other things. And maybe some of these are not questions, but maybe actually just requests for additional information or consideration. So I'm cognizant of the fact that the majority of municipalities in the province do have at-large, and that where the ward system is used more often than not is when population sizes go over 50,000. So pivoting from that, I'm also wondering, can you start to maybe address some of that in your future work? Can you address issues of log rolling, gerrymandering? Can you also address what's in front of our community in particular, which is, you know, came up in an earlier conversation about what is a community of interest and how might we be influenced by hosting potentially the world's largest nuclear build, which is going to not just be an issue that is a division between urban and rural anymore. It will be situated in the rural part of Port Hope. The project is going to have significance right across the community. Does that create then something that is more important as an issue of a community anchoring than potentially any other division or distinct group within the community? So it's something else that I'm very interested in hearing more about from your perspective.
Yeah. So I think a couple of things. Definitely we can start to look at, you know, some of those at-large stats and if there's relationships to population, size of places, and all of those things. Some of the other things we're talking about is, you know, things that we need to consider, but a lot of these things we need to keep in mind that we're looking at this from the perspective of a couple of elections, right? And that we don't want to give you a recommendation, not that we don't want to, but it's pretty hard to give you a recommendation to try to think about what is Port Hope going to look like in 2040 or 2045 or 2050? And some of these concepts, like with some of the growth and the nuclear power generation and all of those things, are out there a bit. All things that, you know, the contemporary councils are going to be starting to think about. But in terms of how it's going to start to shape the landscape of Port Hope, they're probably, and again, this may change and we may get new information, but according to the, or working with the planning department, not like in terms of major magnitude, nothing in the next couple of elections, right? In terms of population impacts and all those things, but community of interest for sure. I mean, I think that's what we're getting at in terms of starting to look at the difference between one option that maintains the urban and rural divide and the other options that start to say, let's look at Port Hope in perhaps a more contemporary way. I don't want to assume that, right? Maybe contemporary means status quo, but perhaps in a more contemporary way that starts to look at when these things start to happen and these divisions start to lessen, what should the ward system look like?
Okay, I think I'll respectfully disagree with the comment about Wesleyville only because we've just been discussing how already our community is transformed by the discussions that are underway. And even if you think about the next potential step of dismantling the current plant at that location and what that's going to mean in terms of a population surge. So whilst we're talking about a longer term project, I actually don't think it's that far into the future for us not to be seeing it as a really key issue for consideration.
Yeah, but I think even the population surge that we're talking about with regard to some of the employment that may start to come, I believe is already encapsulated in the population projections.
No, and growth forecasts. They're not actually, not accurately. So I think that's really something. It's something that we've been having conversations about. Those growth numbers that are now part of population growth forecasts do not, in fact, accurately reflect what is potentially going to be the growth here.
But there's only a certain number of units and land that is ready to develop, right? So, I mean, even if we thought population was going to go up by 10,000 more than what we're projecting, where are those people going to live? Because and this is, you know, at least from my perspective, and again, we may have information, you may have information that we don't have, but what we're looking at typically when we look and work with your planning department are things that are like for sure thing, right? We're looking at a 10-year forecast. A lot of these things, when we're talking about units being built, the land hasn't even been zoned for those units to be built in. So that takes years and years. And until we're getting to the point where land is zoned, land is ready, developers have come in, ready to build, occupancy actually happens, and all the economics that are going on right now. I mean, I'm not saying that it can't happen. We're talking about forecasts, but based on everything we're looking at now, we don't foresee this huge, huge population surge.
I think that it might be wise to just revisit that one more time because it's a constantly evolving project with constantly new information, constantly new development projects being proposed and coming forward to the community. So I'm not disputing, you know, I think in a regular case scenario that might be true, but I think we're in a pretty unique situation. And given the fact that this is the first time that we're doing a ward boundary review in a very long time, I would hope that it would have, I don't want us to be doing this every 10 years or every 8 years. So it's got to have some longevity in it. And then I guess just the last question, and this is it for me, after an election is, you know, maybe I'd like to know from the community as you move forward, is the question, do councillors see themselves as representing the good of the entire community, or are they seeing themselves as representing only a segment of the community? It's something that I think about all the time. And of course, I'm a mayor at large, so I know what my answer is, but I wonder how other council members feel about that particular question. And I know that there's no answer, but I would like to have more information around that consideration. Councillor Todd.
Thank you. And I'm going to pick up on the deputy mayor role as well, and a little bit what the mayor was saying in consideration of population. Because I think we are coming into a bit of a unique situation, which may or may not have been captured in the report. One of which is, you know, should we go ahead and we are going to be a host community for the nuclear power plant, the role of the mayor can also be taking on a very large position because of the intersectionality between the province and the feds, which would elevate the role,
the deputy mayor potentially into a place where the work of that body is probably more than what we would see in communities of our size. And so I'm wondering whether or not there's a way in which to be able to give that lens, because when we look at these kinds of decisions that we have to make, there is a lens that comes with that that is quite unique to us. Like, we often look at ourselves as a little Port Hope, but the what's on the immediacy of our horizon, immediacy as in the next term, is that we could be going into some very large negotiations, which would put a body of work on top of mayor that would not normally sit on a community of this size. And so I don't think that's necessarily expressed anywhere. I think we're looking at everything as, all things being equal, this is what the deputy mayor role would do for a community your size. And I don't think all things are equal going in. So I just wonder whether there's some consideration, I guess, around that, or is that worthy of consideration in your eyes?
I think it's worthy, like, and I don't want to put this back on you, but ultimately I think a lot of the questions are questions that, again, we can give you perspectives. And you know, I can tell you that there's lots of municipalities of your size that have, you know, big projects or big subdivisions or complex, like, that have a deputy mayor and that don't have a deputy mayor, or have smaller councils, or some have bigger, you know, like, unfortunately, there's no criteria or measuring stick that I can give you to say, like, yes, because you are doing this and you're this population, you should have, like, it just doesn't exist.
Yeah, I think where I was saying, not necessarily for our benefit, but as we go into the next phase and we're doing more public consultation, how do we address that? Because you're going to be doing the public consultation, you'll be doing the presentations. How does that get expressed to the community? I guess is where I'm looking at.
Yeah, we can be clear about, you know, the growth potential and the projects and all of those things, like, when we're speaking to the community. I think, again, like, as council, like, you know, speaking to your constituents about the issue, like, trying to put as much information out there about the subject as we can. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Deputy Mayor. Thank you. So just to follow up with the mayor's last comment, and I was actually had some things written down here that I wanted to speak about anyway. So the idea of having one at large, including rural and urban, that never crossed my mind ever. But now that, you know, I start thinking about it, I think the rural people would be very afraid of that idea, because the mindset is that no one urban would vote for a rural candidate. But I don't necessarily see that as true at all. I handle probably, I would say, more urban emails and issues than I do rural. And in the last campaign, I had urban people supporting my campaign financially, even though they couldn't vote for me. And I've had people tell me that from urban who have told me that they're glad that they voted for me. And of course, they did not vote for me because they couldn't have. So I think that people lose sight of who they vote for, because we do help anybody who comes our way, at least most of us, I think we do. And a comment that you had made a little while ago, you said usually rural is more engaged than urban, and we could see that through this process. I went to every single open house you had, and it was almost 100% rural people there. So have you seen with your own experiences an at-large where it is rural and urban mixed? Is there truth in that rural would never get voted in because there's less.
No, and I think, and sorry, and for you, Mayor, I think I mentioned that, right? Like, that in reality, that population metric doesn't always play out, right? Because of all the things we just talked about, because of rural engagement, because of exposure, reputation, identity, all of those things can play into it. What I'm saying is, at some point, right, population metrics, not always, but are typically going to start to win out, right? And at some point, and not only, this is not me, but this is also talking to people at public engagement, looking at stats on engagement and voter participation. People move into an area, number one, they're not engaged, right? It usually takes about 10 years to get properly participating and engaged in local politics. So as that happens, as more people move into an urban area, likelihood of people moving into the urban area are coming from outside of Port Hope. As that happens, again, that's not a guarantee, right? Things are always different in different places. The likelihood, I think, is fair to say, the population metrics are going to start to win out, and you're probably going to have a council that is dominated by, you know, urban councillors, right? Not a guarantee, but I'll give you an example. Even in London, we did a ward boundary review. They have three, I think, what are defined as rural wards, because they encompass all of that area south of London. But all of those rural wards have these like little subdivisions that have started to creep in from the southern urban boundary. The vast majority of people I talked to in those wards were like, we're called rural wards anymore, but I haven't seen my councillor, because the last couple of elections, the councillors have come from each of those subdivisions, because it's a lot easier to campaign in a subdivision than it is in the rural area. There's, you know, and maybe part of this, right, when we talk about all these different stats, do we have better voter engagement in rural? Do we have better voter turnout in multiple wards? What about at large wards? There's a whole bunch of factors that go into it that we're not even bringing up that we hear about. Where are the polling stations? How convenient is it? Do you have internet voting or online? Like, there's a million other factors that are very causal, right? That, you know, so to say, like, yes, at large is better. Well, I don't know, maybe, right? Maybe if voter turnout is the only metric we're looking at, maybe. But what about all the other things, right? What about if you don't know your constituents you're voting for, right? Like, there's a million things, right? And that's why I keep kind of harping back to the same thing. We can look at all the stats and compare and perspectives. Ultimately, our job here, your job, my help, I hope, is to determine what of that, all of those different things, what works best here, right? Maybe after all this, maybe this works best here, right? After the entire review. But that's what we're trying to figure out.
Councillor Clare.
I'd like to just, so the question around examples where an urban rural community has an at-large system. We have one right here in Northumberland County in Brighton. And actually one of their councillors sent an email to the mayor and myself earlier in this process explaining how their system works. And they currently have three members who live in the rural area at the table, including the mayor. And they said the way that they did it, they were amalgamated at the same time as Port Hope, but they chose to go with an at-large system right at amalgamation. And he said that there's a rural working group. So there's like a committee who advises on rural issues that's all made up of rural residents. And that's how they ensure that that smaller population area is represented in a very focused way without having a ward system. Again, not advocating for that necessarily, but just sharing that example.
Thank you, Councillor Clare. And I have one other question around, if you've got a community or a municipality like ours, if we were to have a really robust centralized customer service that to date we have not yet had, can you point to other municipalities that have such a system and how that may or may not affect how constituents feel about having their interests represented, responded to in a quick fashion? So does that become a factor in how people are feeling that their interests are received and heard and responded to?
Yeah, thanks. So I'll give an example of something that comes up quite a bit. Is what instead of when we talk about council size and council composition, we've had councillors say, well, instead of going up in size or changing composition, why don't we just have more admin staff? Why doesn't every councillor have an executive assistant? Or to what you're saying, why isn't there a more centralized place to allocate how issues and requests come in? Sure. I mean, all of that is possible, but I think it's starting to really get away from what our job and what our scope is. Our scope is to look at the system, evaluate, determine whether through composition, size, or elected at large, changing, you can have our system, in our opinion, of meeting the guiding principles, good. All of those other, I think, come after, right? That you guys to decide whether for your constituents, what better, what might not, do we support instead of all of those things. But it to get outside of the scope of what you have to look at in terms of the project here.
Thank you. Any questions or comments on the table?
Just have the comment that I had before, and I say it again, that I've noticed the change in conversation in Port Hope. It used to be Ward 1, Ward 2, now it's rural in Port Hope. We have that distinct community boundary. And looking at all the options presented, I stated before, we still don't change that. No matter how we slice the pie, fundamentally, we still retain with the options we currently have, not saying they can't change, two representatives and four urban representatives. Fundamentally, it doesn't change at that base level.
Well, it does in the other, all the options in the latter part of the report start to move away from the existing urban and rural line that exists now and start to encompass other areas. So I think I know what you mean. Like, generally, it's a rural area that has an urban part attached to it. There's still, you know, the pieces still kind of work out the same. But all those other options do start to blur those lines, right? And start to look at what might future Port Hope, I think, to the mayor's point, what might future Hope Port Hope look like? If you started to account for some of these different populations, if you started to account for as the urban area started to expand outward. So, you know, yes and no, like there's definitely a component that is status quo, but I think there's a whole component that starts to not blow it up, but blur it.
Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Just to add to Daryl's point though, so this sort of came forward because rural felt underrepresented, and they have felt that way for a long time with having 2 to 4. With those maps that are done now, where you reach over into the urban area, it's actually potentially reducing the rural elective because there's only one ward that would be exclusively rural. So we could actually be taking away. The only way to get more rural is if it was completely at large.
Absolutely, right? Absolutely. Those latter options focus on population parity, right? And the only way to achieve that is to start grabbing, you know, depending on which way you look at it, you can look at it like the rural grabbing urban or the urban encompassing land, right? Grabbing land to but absolutely, right? Then to account for population parity, you're going to start to see a loss of rural representation, 100%.
That's fair.
Yeah. I have a question about process because I think in our last meeting, the recommendation was that we provide direction to you around what to include in the next phase of consultation, if we wanted all the options out later, what for that. So I wondered if that's what we're planning to do today, because I noticed on the agenda, it's just received for information as the recommendation. And so I guess that's the answer to that. But if we are going to be talking about what to be included, I think Councilor Mink raises an excellent point. That if the purpose of this process was to consider whether we have equitable representation from the rural area, and in fact, the preliminary phase one preliminary analysis shows, in fact, there's disproportionate representation in favor of rural residents, then to me, even though it doesn't fully address all the criteria, that option of retaining what we have should be part of the mix of what we're looking at, because you know, if that being the case, if we've answered that question, maybe we're comfortable with that and staying with the way we are.
I think just the only thing I would add to that is population based on population metrics, right? The rural but if we start to factor in community of interest and all the different things we're talking about today, so population metrics, we can say that the rural is overrepresented. But when we talk about others, like that's the debate, right? That's a discussion. Is it this? Is it both of these? How do we balance them? So, yeah.
So just to follow up on Councillor Clare, I'd like to ask, do you feel that you've got new input, new questions, and new information that you can continue to bring forward into this evolving process?
Yeah, I think we got great feedback. And we got a good idea and a good flavor of where we're going. In terms of the question, you know, could you provide further direction? For me, I think if it stops here and it's received as information, I have good information. If council wanted to go further and say, absolutely no deputy mayor at large, or absolutely, you know, that it doesn't sound like we're there, right? It's my impressions, or, you know, size wise, absolutely do not increase the size, or absolutely do not decrease. Like, if there was that direction, you know, we could eliminate a couple of options, right? But that would be the only thing further. If council, you know, desires that, then that's something we can explore.
I think Councillor Todd and then Councillor Darrow. Oh, was it? Sorry. You may have not looked in that direction. Sorry.
I have a couple questions, I guess, more directed to staff right now. If we go to a 5 or 6 ward system, maybe Shrishma can answer this. Is there any legislation that stops a candidate from running in multiple wards? There is. Okay.
A candidate, in accordance with the Municipal Elections Act, a candidate can run once, like in that election. So, for example, if, you know, Councillor Toms, you decide to run in Ward 2, then you cannot run in Ward 2 and also run for mayor. You'd have to only choose one nomination.
I got two more quick ones. And along the same line of questioning, as this process carries forward and we get closer and closer to election time, is there a point where we shouldn't be making the decision because the election is right there?
So that's a very good question, Councillor Toms. So in accordance with the Municipal Act, in order for any decision of this council to be valid for the coming 2026 election, the bylaw would need to be passed before the 31st of December. Given where we are in the process, that is not going to happen. So we still have a second set of community engagement that's going to take place following this conversation here, depending on the outcome of this discussion. The second stage of consultation will take place, and the final report is anticipated, with the final recommendations of the consultant, is anticipated to come to this council for consideration in sometime in Q1 of next year. So this council will have an opportunity to provide that feedback on the changes to the ward system. However, those changes would not be in place until the 2030 municipal election. So we would have some time to provide that new data if there was a change in wards, any new data to our Elections Ontario team, so that they are prepared for the 2030 election.
One more quick
question. Go ahead.
This question, I guess, is for Director Baxter. When we have a ward that is mixed now with urban and rural residents, does that, if in any way, affect how our special services are taxed, or does it complicate things at all? Maybe you could speak to that quickly.
Sure. So currently, our special services are identified by the urban and rural area wards. That doesn't necessarily need to be the case. So special services really are identified by the defined benefiting area, right? Currently, when we think of something like transit or policing, right, those areas are aligned, right? So say in an example, say for an example of like the three ward system, right, the rural area, you know, as if it were to stay as it is now, would still pay for, say, the OPP, and the urban area could be divided into two different wards, right? But when you look at your tax bill, nothing would look different, right? Because they're both still paying the same services over the same tax base. Make sense? So it really has to do more about where the services are being provided, and it really doesn't have anything to do with the electoral districts.
Okay, so that doesn't matter. So that doesn't matter then if you have rural residents now comprising a urban ward?
Not from a tax standpoint.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
And Kate, did you
just want to respond to that? Yeah, it would be, because rural now only pays for OPP. You mix rural and urban, now you've got something to contend with.
Yeah. So if I may clarify that for my statement, right? So as long as the OPP, I'll just use that example, as long as the OPP continues to be what I'll call the rural area as we identify it now, right, and the Port Hope Police Service continues to be the urban area as we define it now, that doesn't have to be the same as ward 2 and ward 1. That makes sense, right? We could have 6 wards, right? We would still tax on the basis, right, that the OPP is a distinct police service and the defined benefiting area is the rural area. Right? So regardless of who you voted for and who your elected council member was, that does not matter. Right? The current rural area would still pay for the OPP, even if it's one ward or three different wards, or there was a ward that incorporated some of the rural area and the urban area, right? Because that is a possibility as well. The OPP cost would continue to be charged to taxpayers within that defined benefiting area. That's what determines it, not the electoral districts.
And Councillor Todd.
And I just want to circle back to some of the conversations we were having about Deputy Mayor and representation from wards, and possibly for council consideration then, if we were to give direction that, you know, the council composition stays the same size and the Deputy Mayor role was to be an elected position, then there would be one less councillor, and if that ends up being two in the three in the urban, then some of that does balance out a little bit because we have two elected who are going to be overseeing the entire I think some of that came in here is one of the options, but anyways, but that's something for consideration as well.
Councillor Clare.
Yeah, to the question about additional direction, I think I would like to have a conversation as council this evening about whether we do want to provide something more clear around that. There are a lot of options in this initial phase, and I think almost too many to really engage with in the next phase of public engagement. So I think we should take the time that we have today to talk a bit. I did also want to, just because it has been a month, I just wanted to also raise that the issue of voter turnout, which to me is very compelling, that in the last two municipal elections in Ontario, municipalities that used an at-large or multi-member, so like wards where you elect more than one councillor in that ward system, had an 18% higher voter turnout on average than those with a single-member ward system. And of the 43 municipalities that achieved that wonderful 50% or higher voter turnout, all but one use a multi-member system. To me, that is really, really compelling. And when I think about why we're here, if we're going to change something, surely it has to be because we're going to strengthen our local democracies through this change. We have a pretty high voter turnout relative to the rest of the province at 43% versus the provincial average of 33%. We also have a fairly diverse council table in terms of gender, in terms of occupation, in terms of, rural representation. And I think we need to make sure that whatever we do doesn't lose those existing strengths, but rather further strengthens our local democracy. And to me, I see no compelling evidence that a single member system does that. So for me, I would like to put that on the table as potentially something that we don't pursue any further past this current phase. I also would, as I mentioned, like to see our existing model in the mix for consideration so that community members can look at that as side by side to compare that to the other options we could choose and look at whether they feel that those other options are an improvement upon what we already have. And I think I would also like potentially to have an at-large system included in there so that we can also look at the pros and cons on paper as we have with these other options.
Thank you, Councillor Clare. And just because I had so many questions around at large, I would definitely support that. But I think, like any good policy consideration, you always start with do nothing, which is the status quo, and compare that to other options. So I do think that it's valuable to have that as a placeholder. It's the way in which any good policy analysis is done of any policy option, is you always consider the status quo or the do nothing.
And that's exactly what we do in our analysis. We always start with status quo, evaluate that. And at large is always, and we're always clear about that at the end of recommendations, that do nothing is an option, at large is an option, and then any other recommendations that we may or may not have. So definitely.
So any other comments or questions on the table, Deputy Mayor?
Not to go too long, but I am quite interested in the idea you had mentioned of balanced wards, so 2-2-2. I think that is something that seems very fair. And so that's something that I haven't thought a lot about, but I would definitely like to see that on the table as opposed to unbalanced that we have right now.
Okay, I think we've had a really good conversation today. I think everyone's been able to share their thoughts and ask questions and make comments. So hopefully you've taken all that forward and that will inform the next phase of the work that you've got in front of you. And so the recommended motion in front of us is to receive this for information. I do know that you've mentioned that the at-large pieces are going to be considered as well as the status quo. Are we comfortable with receiving this for information? Can I get a mover and seconder for the? I think we have to look at what's on the agenda first and decide if we're going to vote on that before we have an alternative motion.
So, Madam Mayor, if a council member wishes to bring forward an alternative motion, that is absolutely
okay.
As for the chair, that's absolutely
okay.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily ready to put forward a motion. I know we have 2 hours until our next meeting, so I was hoping to hear.
Actually, just to clarify, we've got only until 5:30 because the consultant needs to leave. So
yes, sure. So an hour still with the consultant still in the room. I was actually hoping that when I last spoke, I was hoping that we could have a bit of a conversation, and I was hoping to hear from other members of council the comment I raised about whether we want to continue to look at the full spread. I appreciate with the addition of at large potentially and continuing to look as comparison to what we already have, but does anybody else have any thoughts around whether we even want to continue to look at the single representative, the 5 or 6 or ward system?
Hey, number 2, Councillor Todd.
I do.
I'm just going to weigh in and say that I think because the community consultation piece is still ongoing, I still would like to hear from the community their thoughts on all the possibilities in front of them to have a fulsome community engagement process. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. So to ask that question, I think yes, I think all 6 should still be on the table as an option. And I just want to clarify, when I was saying the 3 wards with 2 in each, that was essentially keeping it as is and not having that overreaching into the urban. Strictly be dividing existing into
basically dividing urban Ward Hope into 2 wards, keeping rural status
as is. Yeah, and then I would like to. I don't know if this is the time we do this or later. If we don't choose to go as a deputy mayor at large, then do we later decide whether we have one or not, whether we appoint or not appoint at all? Would that come later?
That's all within your purview. Yeah. No deadlines on that either. All of that decided. As part of this, or it could be something like you're talking about, if you decide to keep one, whether you're going to elect it at large or select it, can that be decided later?
Yeah, so I guess what I'm asking is really the question we're asking is, do we want it at large? We're not asking if we want it appointed, we're just saying elected at large. And
correct.
Then if we say no, then we figure out whether we want to have one or not.
Correct. Correct. Yeah, exactly. So the at large has an impact on the composition, right? So if it's decided if you want a deputy mayor at large, then the next decision from there comes, does council go up by 1? Everything can stay exactly the same and you just add a deputy mayor at large. If then that next question is no, we want to keep council the same size, then obviously if you want a deputy mayor at large, you have to get rid of 1 councillor to keep the same size. So yes.
Councillor Todd.
Right. So I think in the interest of paring things back, which I think is what you were hoping to do, Councillor Clare, I would propose that we don't want to increase the size of council. I think that would be my take, is this is as big as it gets. I would also propose that we should look at the deputy mayor role as an elected at large role. That would be the two that I would say that if we were looking at paring down by adopting those, it would pare down some of the options.
Thank you, Councillor Todd. Councillor Less.
Yeah, when we had the first set of discussions, I had the opportunity to go on Facebook and just pose a question to the residents. What do you consider equal representation? The one response that was a mathematical replay of what the person wanted to talk about, which fine, I mean, his or her opinion, that's wonderful. So I don't think that we've truly engaged the rural people, the urban people in this discussion, and we got to have that conversation. Because to leave all the alternatives you've left on the table, again, we're just kicking the can down the road with no real purpose. So we got to get to our constituents, to the entire community, and see what they think.
Okay. Councillor Clare, are you okay now? Great. So going back to the motion on the agenda is to receive this for information. I know you've heard lots of conversation here at the table, lots of ideas, things that you're going to take forward into that community engagement piece. And so can I get a mover and seconder for this? Moved by Councillor Less, seconded by Councillor Darrell. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor? Thank you, and that is passed. Thank you very much
for
returning back. Thank you very much for continuing to engage with us on this.
I appreciate the discussion. It's great feedback.